All right. Got a great agency spotlight talk today with Mr. Chuck Boyce. Chuck's one of the guys that have been here in the agency that has been around the block a few times, seen the good, the bad, the ugly of especially in the book publishing realm, and definitely has lessons learned, you know, things that a lot of times you think is a good idea and turns out to be a kind of problematic mess at times, and really about how to do things, systematized way and keep things kind of cookie cutter. So Chuck, thank you so much for coming on with me today.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
All right. So let's just get right down into the meat of some of this. You know, generally when people think, okay, we're going to put together a book, and you've been involved in multi-author books, you've been involved with single author books, and there's, it's, you know, a lot of people think that there's something very, you know, cut and dry, and here's what to expect, and this is what's going to happen next, and this is what's going to happen next. But let's kind of talk about some of the war stories of things that the unexpected, so people can think about and see that there really is, you know, a way around it, or a way to overcome some things that pop up. You know, if there's difficult clients, difficult, you know, people with their writing their books, the styles of writing and things like that. So what have you seen in the world of, let's talk multi-author books to start with, some of the things that you've seen for people to look out for and things to really consider as they're going into publishing multi-author books?
Sure. The main issue when you're dealing with multi-author books is just that. You're dealing with multiple authors. And so frequently, it's... it's about keeping everybody on the same page. I often refer to it as trying to herd cats. So the more authors you have, the more personalities, the more writing styles you have, the more important it is that you have a process and that you've got somebody on your team that is constantly in contact with everybody in those books. You know, as you said, I've participated as an author of a handful of these, and I can tell you from as an author until I got that final email saying, you know, your chapter is due today, otherwise we're not putting you in the book, that's usually about the time that I started writing it. So keeping those deadlines in front of your author will make your job so very much easier in getting that book done and getting it done in a timely manner.
Yeah, well, that's one thing. I definitely congratulate you on you know, coming up with that process and getting that systematized, because one of the reasons that I like to stick when I'm dealing multi-authors is the interview style book, because it is something that, you know, I'm kind of in control of that process, and it's something it's not something that you have to rely on the author to write. So there's different styles. One, you know, obviously there's the interview style, which can cut, you know, time and process down tremendously. Then there's the time where the author, you say, you know, send me a topic and then write a chapter. And then what happens is like what you described is, 80% of the chapters show up the day of the deadline. And then you have to sift through all those, and the quality is generally less than what you had hoped for, I guess. And then there's the ghostwriting piece where you'll work with someone, interview them, and have a ghostwriter do that for them. You know, what do you see the pros and the cons of each one of those types of scenarios?
I love the interview, you know, your method of the one topic, one solution model. It makes it so much easier. We have a motto around here, and everybody that works with me knows, I like stuff done fast. I don't have a lot of patience, and I just want stuff done, and I want it off the board as quickly as possible. And if, as we do multi-author books going forward, our focus will be on the one problem, one solution interview style, because I know that we can set a firm deadline and we can get that done. And that's even more about putting the responsibility on us and our team to connect with those authors, get those interviews done, and get them in place. My second favorite is using the ghostwriter. We can use those interviews and then send those out to a ghostwriter who is going to make sure that the book has a consistent tone and voice across all of the contributors within the book, so that for the reader, it's going to read much, much smoother than, say, you know, if you have an attorney backed up with an accountant, backed up with a real estate guy, who are going to have very different speech patterns. Now, one of the drawbacks there is, especially with using a ghost, is then the negotiation with the contributing author on getting them to approve their chapter, because they're going to want it in their own voice. So you have to kind of find a medium where everybody can be happy and set that expectation up front. If this is going to be a ghostwritten book, that the book will have a consistent tone throughout to ensure it has the highest level of readability. So no more would I let a contributor to a multi-author book pick what typeface we use on their chapter. I have to kind of rein them back in on what it sounds like, so that we have a good, high quality, consistent product. Now, the hardest of them, obviously, for a whole bunch of reasons, is having everybody contribute their own chapter. And like I said, I've been in probably 6 or 7 of those types of books myself, and it would probably be the least likely one that I would want to do in the future. Hard to get stuff in on time, hard to get them done fast. I know I've been with another publisher, have participated in 4 of their books, and in each one of those cases, it took almost a year from the time I signed the contract until I saw my finished books. And that, for me, is just way too long.
Yeah, that's the definitely the one thing. And it even seems, you know, when you have a ghostwriter, there always seems to be that one person that wants to write their own, you know, that they just feel that they've got to get their story out. And then obviously when you have the ghostwriter do it, there's some people that, you know, one of the biggest problems I've come across by doing that is they don't recognize their voice in their chapter, and it feels awkward to them, regardless of how well it's written. So, and that's why, again, you know, the interview books are so much easier for me, because they recognize the voice. It's their words that came out just kind of cleaned up, you know?
I would agree. And certainly probably one of the most cost effective and profitable to do is the One Problem, One Solution interview book. It takes all of that extra work out of the process. So depending on where your price point is, that's going to make sense for a lot of people and a lot of projects.
Yeah. And so that's what I want to talk about, the things that specifically that you have in your head. One is the price point, because there's always people that are guessing, how much should I charge? How much should I charge? And, you know, to me, the only real answer, you know, we have sweet spots, but the only real answer is you charge how much you can confidently look a person in the eye and tell them you charge. Anything else is there's no way that you can duplicate results from one to the other. But I think it's good for people to understand what realistically is being charged out in the world. And, you know, not just with your own company publishing, but I'm sure you've seen a range from companies that are charging to put together books or ghostwrite books or things like that, in different qualities and styles. But what is the range that you've seen throughout your career in doing this? And I know the ones I've seen, some people are, you know, some of them are staggering. But what is it that you see that is realistic, what people are willing to pay to participate in these types of books?
Well, for a multi-author book, generally we're seeing our sweet spot be around $2,000 to $3,000. And that kind of depends on what the whole package is. It's going to depend on if you're doing a soft cover or a hardcover book, which we on occasion will do. And it depends on what the style is of the book. Obviously, if I'm using a ghostwriter and we're ghostwriting stuff, we're going to be at the higher end. And generally, we will offer that to a client as an upgrade. So if they buy our base package at, say, $2,500, but feel that they want a ghostwriter to do the work for them, will generally upcharge that an additional $1,000. I personally have paid anywhere from a low of about $900 to be in a multi-author book to well over $6,000 to be in a multi-author book. And the publisher that I most recently did one was probably about 2 years ago. And I understand that particular company is charging in the neighborhood of 10 grand for a chapter in a multi-author book.
Yeah, so it really does. It's all over the board. So, you know, when people ask you, what can I charge? Well, you can charge whatever you can spit out and have confidence of the value. So, but it's good to hear from people that have seen this, you know, what's the real numbers that are being charged out there. We're not saying that people should go out and charge $10,000, but just so you understand that there is an established, you know, threshold or price points that people are using for these types of books.
And it can depend on your audience and your marketplace. You know, there are books that I have done or that we have in the process that are special purpose books. You know, that they're passion projects for me, supporting a specific cause. And generally, those we do substantially less. I'm working on a project now to highlight 12 wounded veterans who took part in a project with Team River Runner, led by a gentleman who is a blind vet and the first person to solo kayak down the Yellowstone River. So that project is a passion project for me, and we're doing that as close to cost as we possibly can.
Yeah, and those are, it's always great to be able to do that kind of thing. And that's one of the great things about the book publishing, is that there is a lot of room for being able to be creative and do things like that. You know, the overhead can be very little if you play it right, or you have a lot of room to actually put in a lot of great perks for people that are paying a higher or paying a premium for that. So that's one of the things I love, is the flexibility to be able to do things like that. One of the things that I want to talk about, because this is one thing that you definitely have more experience than I do, in this, and there are people that have questions. When I publish multi-author books, you know, it's generally for a very specific reason. You know, people want to establish the best-selling author for credibility. But you, take them on, and I always publish straight through Amazon, whether Kindle or CreateSpace, but you do go outside of those at times. You said, you know, when you have special premium packages where maybe a hardcover book, but what I also want to specifically talk around ISBN numbers, because, you know, one of the quickest and easiest way I do is, you know, to go through Amazon's process and get the one, I can't remember the slightly premium one that gets the most distribution. Mm-hmm. Yep. I have done my own ISBN one time and probably didn't pay attention to it enough to even realize what the benefit was or what I got out of it. But if you could talk about why someone would want to consider their own ISBN versus going through the Amazon route, and what the circumstances and the how much flexibility it gives them in the future if they do that.
Sure. So the ISBN is basically the UPC of the book world, and it is every book in every version and every format gets a unique number. So like you said, using CreateSpace or KDP for the Kindle, Amazon will go out and assign you one of their numbers. So beyond identifying the title, the author, and the format that the book is in, for me, the most important thing is it identifies who the publisher is, so that when that book becomes available for distribution, whether that be through Amazon, Barnes & Noble Online, or any of the other online retailers, my company shows up, or one of my imprints shows up as the publisher of record. So it's a way, with not very much investment and pretty easy to do, to kind of elevate my publishing company versus somebody that is just doing self-publishing. So because I started my career 20 plus years ago in the publishing world, working on textbooks, college textbooks, I have more of a snobby view of the publishing, especially on the print basis. So by having an ISBN, it gives more weight, more credibility to my publishing company. And so if you go to myidentifiers.com, which is the U.S. distributor of ISBN numbers. It's very easy to set up your own self as a publishing company. You don't even need a formal company. You don't need, you can set up yourself individually as the publisher. And then it allows you to create multiple imprints. So under my company, we have three imprints. I have Brandywine Executive Publishing, I have Legal Authority Press, and I have Pro Player Press. So each one of those imprints now is focused on a specific segment of the market that we're going to deal with. So a book that I do with a fitness and sports person is going to be done under Pro Player, and it's going to be held separate than a book that we do with, say, my IRS tax attorney client. So it just kind of gives us a little bit more credibility, makes us look more like the big guys.
Yeah, and so that's, I think, certainly somebody that's wanting to establish a publishing company and expand and do things, it's always good to have that control for. And there's a lot of people that are concerned or worried, or they make a mistake if they don't do that, right? You know, so for the general person that's kind of helping businesses and more on a consultant role. And that's what I kind of look at our company is more of a consultant role. Cause when we help individuals with their books, it's always done, you know, in their accounts. We don't want any, you know, publishing ties or accounting of that, and where you will do more, perform more of the publishing activities. Is there any big detriments that people should be aware of when they do choose to go the kind of canned ISBN that, you know, people are always looking for the what ifs? What's the biggest what if that you can see down the road if they do that? Or what's the worst case scenario of what they might have to do in a situation if they've done that?
Here's the good news. There really isn't one. People change publishing companies all the time, and books get reissued and bought and sold across publishing companies all the time. So it really is just a matter of taking the same edition, taking the same book, creating a new edition of it. It could be exactly the same, requesting that ISBN number, getting it set up and sent through. It will then show up as your publishing company. Has no negative impact whatsoever. So if you're starting off with using the Amazon and the CreateSpace ISBNs and decide later that you want to be more of, take on more of a publisher role, and you want to bring those titles in under your umbrella, there's no issue whatsoever. Just going out, requesting the ISBN, setting it up with all of the same information, putting that it's a change of publisher in when you do the online form, and it's good to go.
Yeah, so I think that's a good, definitely good news, like you said, for a lot of people, because a lot of people think they're making some irrevocable, you know, decision that you know, that they're always going to haunt them of what could happen. So I think that's a great explanation. I think, you know, lets a lot of people be more confident in choosing that ISBN when they're getting started.
Right. And I did it recently because I had a book that I published about 2 years ago, and I had done it on CreateSpace with their ISBN, and I just reissued it recently with an ISBN for the Brandywine Executive Press so that it showed up with my publishing company. And then I just told Amazon that the old ISBN was no longer available. So.
Yeah. So
no harm, no foul.
No, it's kind of odd. It's one of those things that always pop up that people always know. What about ISBN? What about ISBN? And without really kind of understanding or what it is or what it is for. Now, a question, and I'm not sure if you've had this come across, but there are a few people that come across people that have books that are published through a what someone called a vanity publisher or something that really have them kind of, you know, handcuffed in that, oh, I was in this book, I'd love to make it a bestseller, but, you know, I don't have rights, I don't have that account. Have you come across that where people have something that's in the hands of someone else to be able to take that and maybe reissue it or take control of at least the content to put it out in a different version or edition to make it work? Ways to kind of get around a lot of those handcuffs, because some of them are pretty expensive handcuffs to get out of if you go by the way of the publisher.
Sure. And I'll start this answer with, I'm not an attorney. Yeah. I'm certainly not an intellectual property attorney. However, looking at those agreements, generally those Generally with a vanity press type arrangement, it's usually easier to get out because the publisher has not really made much of an investment, and that author has generally paid to play in that environment. So those are generally easier to break, get out. But most publishing contracts are going for books are going to be for a specific edition in a specific format. So, for example, if the book was issued in hardcover, there may be wiggle room to release that under a different publisher as a softcover or as an ebook. Again, you're going to have to look at the contract and see if it specifically states the media that they're locked in for, but a lot of times, especially an older contract that may have been done before the prevalence of ebooks, that may be an avenue for that author to gain control of that work. There's also usually a segment in there about continuous publication. So if the book has gone out of print at any time, generally those rights are going to revert back to the author. So that's another piece to kind of look at and see if the publisher has let the book go out of print. That may be another way. But before you did anything, certainly you want to talk to a solid literary attorney or an intellectual property attorney.
Yeah, perfect. And yeah, that's the, just to see, because usually, you know, we stay away from some of those, especially the ones that say, well, they want $5,000 to let me in to change something. And, you know, it's just a shame that there's people that operate like that. But just so you know, people know, if you really feel strongly about it or want to get involved, then there's, you know, ways that you may be able to do that fairly easily. One last thing I want to talk to you about before we go is the outside of the book publishing, you do some things that are value adds to your authors and that a lot of people may not think about. You know, some of the things that we do, obviously we do the news releases and we'll, you know, give them their awards and things like that. But what are some of the value add things that really go kind of the extra mile and make those clients feel good about working with you in the process that they've been through to you? And also you've been pretty good about getting testimonials back from clients. So kind of those two areas of beyond the book, the extra stuff, and then the time to strike for those testimonials.
Sure. Some of the like two of my favorite things that we get to do, probably my number one favorite is we've done now a couple of we've hosted a few launch parties with our clients. So we basically will become their event planner. We've had some local authors here in the greater Delaware area that have done books, and we've coordinated a nice little cocktail hour launch party for them, as much for us as it is for them, because it gives us a lot of kind of cool footage to use for future marketing. Nothing like a big crowd of room. We'll blow up the cover of the book, just, you know, like 3x4 poster size. We'll coordinate a book signing, pack the place with, you know, 40 or 50 raving fans, and then use that opportunity to also present their bestseller award to them. So that's always that's a lot of fun. You can find lots of places that will let you do stuff like that. Bars are great on like Tuesday nights when it's dead. So if you approach the owner and say, hey, I want to bring in, you know, 40 or 50 people, I'll buy some, you know, give me a deal on some hors d'oeuvres. Can we have kind of a private place, do a cash bar? They are usually more than welcome to work with you on a dead night, and you get a really great event going. And the authors think, you know, that you've pulled out all the stops and you've done it, you know, for a couple hundred bucks. The other thing that we're doing now is we're starting to build out media kits for our authors so that they have all of the things that a traditional publisher may do for them. So we will do a one sheet, which is basically the cover of the book and details about the book and the author, so that they can take that to some local establishments that may want to carry a copy of that book, make it very easy for them. We'll do a media sheet full with suggested interview questions and a summary of the book, format up a single chapter so that if they get media inquiries and they haven't contracted with us to handle those, they have a nice PDF package, all done, formatted, ready to go, that they could shoot off to any of their media contacts, or anybody that reaches out, or proactively send to some local press and reporters to see if that is something, and try to get some play that way as well.
Yeah, that's really powerful stuff to be able to do, because there's, to me, one, no better reason or excuse to do an interview is because of a book. So yeah, give them that kind of arsenal behind them is something that so many people kind of neglect or just fail to follow up on. And also, so with the testimonials, you're kind of getting people like right when they're, just really, realizing what's happening and feeling really good about what you've accomplished to get the testimonials.
I love to schedule a call the day after we run the bestseller launch, get the client on the phone and kind of go over what the numbers were, what the list that they hit, confirm what we're going to do, what we're going to say in the press release, kind of get them to verbally okay that. And then at the end of that call, just say, hey, tell me, can we get a couple of words from you as a testimonial? And then I'll usually hit the record on my phone. And at that point, they're just basically gushing. Now, if it's a local client, we can do that meeting in person. We love to get them in front of a camera and try to get a video testimonial out of them as well. And then it's a great time to ask, hey, do you know anybody else that might want to do a book, or anybody you would want to, who would you want to co-author a book with? And then kind of take it from there.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. And there's no better time, you're going to go through all this anyway. And so those are perfect opportunities to be able to do that. Chuck, I want to thank you. I know you're an extremely busy guy, and I want to thank you for coming on and sharing this. This has been really a compacted, dense amount of information that a lot of people have on their minds and about publishing this. And I think you really kind of plowed through some what ifs for a lot of people. So I certainly appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm always here to help.
All right. Fantastic. Well, there you have it, folks. Authority Agency Member Spotlight. Very, very powerful stuff. So until next time, remember, you are the only real game changer.